I think we both have both counsel on video. Mr. Gonzalez, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Your Honor.
Great. And Ms. Zeden?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Mr. Gonzalez, feel free to proceed.
Thank you, Judge Bumate. Your Honors, and may it please the court. Jonathan Gonzalez on behalf of the petitioner. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, and I'll keep an eye on the clock.
Thank you.
Petitioner respectfully requests the court to remand this case for one main error. The immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals erred in finding that Oregon Section 163.190, Oregon's medicine statute, is a crime involving moral turpitude. This is a question of law that the court reviews de novo. The immigration judge held that Oregon's medicine statute requires reprehensible conduct and an evil mind because the conduct goes beyond empty threats to inflict serious injury. But the immigration judge's holding errs because it ignores arguments presented that menacing is akin to apprehension-only simple assault and fails to address the argument that simple assaults are generally not crimes involving moral turpitude absent statutory aggravating factors to indicate moral depravity, matter of Wu. The immigration judge's holding fails to address a properly raised argument, and the Board of Immigration Appeals erred in adopting the immigration judge's holding. After the individual calendar hearing or final hearing before the immigration judge, the BIA in matter of JGP held Oregon menacing is a crime involving moral turpitude because the specific intent to cause fear of imminent serious physical injury involved culpable mental state and reprehensible conduct. But the board's interpretation of Oregon's menacing statute in JGP is unreasonable and in error. If the agency's construction...
Is it your argument that menacing doesn't require any intent to inflict any harm?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it's only a fear, it's only the intent to have put fear in the place of the victim of harm, not actual intent to inflict that harm.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And if the agency's construction is reasonable, Chevron requires a federal court to accept the agency's construction of the statute, even if the agency's reading differs from what the court believes is the best statutory interpretation, Perez Guzman v. Lynch.
Mr. Gonzalez, does the Oregon statute require the victim to actually fear whatever conduct or words the perpetrator initiated under the
statute? I don't believe it requires actual fear.
It's on a reasonable person standard, is that correct? So it, you know, whatever
That's
the
correct.
Words or conduct that a person might do with that specific intent to cause that fear, but an actual person may not need to fear it itself. Is that right?
Correct. Just like a simple assault apprehension.
Now, you know, in matter of JGP, the board points out that simple assault, the reason why it's found, the reason why the board has not found it to be turpitudinous was because it was a general intent statute, and this is a specific intent statute. Why isn't that enough to say that the board's decision is reasonable under those circumstances?
The board is differentiating in JGP. The board is differentiating between Ladder Singh and Fernandez Ruiz when it states that, Your Honor, and that distinction is not applicable here because the statute at issue in Ladder Singh requires actual harm, whereas the statute at issue in Fernandez Ruiz does not require actual harm.
So why is it not depraved to put someone in fear of imminent serious physical injury?
That's because, Your Honor, because there is no intent to harm.
You're putting someone in fear of their life. That's pretty bad.
Right. The aggravating factors cited in other cases by this court for crimes involving moral turpitude have that intent to harm as the aggravating factor of simple assault, not just specific intent, but actual intent to harm, not intent to create a reasonable fear.
But so has any case said that creating reasonable fear of imminent serious injury is not enough to create a depravity or moral turpitudinous activity?
Yes, we believe Fernandez-Ruiz and Coquico apply here. Fernandez-Ruiz, the court held that Arizona's assault statute is not a criminal, a crime involving moral turpitude because it lacked as aggravating factors both a specific intent to cause harm and a requirement that actual harm result.
But wasn't that just simple assault, not fear of serious physical injury? I think it was just injury or a touching, unwanted touching. Here it's little more. You're creating a fear of imminent serious physical injury.
Right. The Arizona statute discusses minor or insignificant injury, but Oregon's menacing statute can be committed by word without intent to harm, nor a requirement that actual harm result. And that's why the BIA's distinction of the language regarding serious injury is irrelevant, because a conviction under a simple assault statute that does not require inflicting bodily injury of any kind is not a CIMT under Fernandez-Ruiz.
Because I'm just like thinking of the scenario. You put a gun that's unloaded to someone's head, you pull the trigger, and just because you had no intent to kill someone, to kill that person, that's pretty depraved to do. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. I would think that would fall under Oregon's higher level assault. That's a felony. I don't know if that would be Oregon menacing.
I see.
The hypothetical that you're posing, Your Honor.
Okay.
I mean, why wouldn't that be menacing? Why would that not be menacing under the statute?
It
might be a lesser included part of the felony, but why isn't that part of menacing under the statute? It seems to me it is.
Yeah, Oregon's statute is not a lesser included of the assault felony. Oregon's menacing statute is not considered a lesser included.
That's correct.
Offense.
That's correct. That's correct. But still, that's you're correct about that. I retract that statement. But nevertheless, why doesn't the hypothetical here count? As it seems to me, that's actually putting somebody in menace of severe bodily harm.
As I responded to Judge Bumate, I believe that would count as an aggravating factor if that was Oregon menacing, but I think that would fall under Oregon's assault felony assault statute as opposed to this Oregon menacing, which is at issue here.
I found the Dompling case that you cited in your brief interesting, where I think the daughter of a mother said something like, I wish you were dead, I could stab you right now. And she was convicted under the menacing statute. As I understood it, there was no evidence that the mother was ever in fear of that statement, although that was not the issue in that case. It was more about the proximity of the statement. But that suggests to me that the law casts a wider net than simply, for example, than the example that my colleagues used of putting a gun to someone's head.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you. And I think Dompling shows that the immigration judge and Board of Immigration Appeals, by adopting the immigration judge's decision, failed to analyze the minimum conduct required for a menacing conviction, and that is below the standard of a crime involving moral turpitude. And in JGP, the board attempts to reconcile the conflict by holding Ladder Singh displaced Fernandez-Ruiz. But the statute at issue in Ladder Singh required intent to injure, not just intent to cause fear or of injury, that the conduct actually resulted in substantial harm by being so unequivocal, immediate, and specific as to convey to the person a threatened gravity of purpose, such that the victim actually experienced sustained fear for their own safety. These aggravating factors are not present within Oregon's menacing statute. And these distinctions demonstrate how Oregon's law departs from the generically defined CIMT, which requires reprehensible conduct. Because
Can I ask, so your argument is that if assault is going to be a CIMT, it has to have an aggregating factor, and that if it doesn't have an aggregating factor, then the BIA's decision is entitled to no Chevron deference. Is that it in a nutshell?
That's correct. Thank you, Your Honor. That's correct. And that's borrowing heavily from Judge Paez's dissent in Garcia Fabella, where my firm represented the petitioner, but a matter of
why are you saying it's in a dissent then? It's not the law. Was it dissent?
Right. the dissent shows that what the law should be in order to bring Oregon's menacing, the treatment of Oregon's menacing as not a CIMT is more consistent with the court's history of Arizona's simple assault statute of apprehension, California's simple assault statute of apprehension. But in Ladder Singh, that is not a, that is a crime involving moral turpitude because of the intent to injure, which is absent here in Oregon, absent in California's laser law covered in Coquico, and absent in Fernandez Ruiz as well.
I guess
well.
One more question. Why yes. isn't it the fact that the fear is serious imminent physical injury the aggregating factor?
Again, when the board points to the serious injury and they emphasize that language, they're comparing it to Ladder Singh. But Ladder Singh has an actual intent to injure, which is why that differs and is distinct from the Oregon, California laser law and the Arizona simple assault law as well. Oregon's menacing fits more within those simple assaults.
I might say the other distinct feature about Ladder Singh, the California law, is that there's actual injury. Right, it's not just an intent to injure, to, but that someone suffers a sustained fear that they might die, or be in grave bodily injury for themselves or their family members, and that is absent in the Oregon statute because, as you just mentioned, no one actually has to be in any fear for to be convicted under the Oregon law.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you, and that's also why Coquico applies here as well. There, the court found the threat associated with unlawful laser activity under California Penal Code 417.26, which requires only an intent to place the victim in apprehension of fear or bodily harm, was not categorically a crime involving moral turpitude because it did not meet Ladder Singh's requirement that the victim experience sustained fear for their safety. And the board in JGP asserts that controlling precedent is dicta without basis. The board's summary dismissal of controlling precedent is not reasonable. For the foregoing reasons, petitioner respectfully requests the court hold that the board's decision in JGP that Oregon's menacing statute is a crime involving moral turpitude is unreasonable. Petitioner further respectfully requests the court reconsider Burboa Rocha, reverse matter of JGP, grant Mr. Flores Vasquez's petition for review on this ground, and remand this case to the board for further consideration of his cancellation of removal in light of the foregoing errors committed by the board in JGP and the board and the immigration judge in the instant case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. With that, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Christina Zeiden. I represent the Attorney General. We respectfully ask the court to deny the petition for review. And I'm going to jump straight into the menacing conviction as well. And so here the board reasonably decided in matter of JGP that Oregon Revised Statute 163.190 menacing is a crime involving moral turpitude. In matter of J and this court has recently as last year deferred to that decision in Garcia Favela versus Garland because it was a reasonable reasonable decision on behalf of the board. And so in matter of JGP, the board decided that the board's decision was based on Oregon menacing reflecting a vicious motive indicative of moral turpitude, and otherwise a culpable mental state and a reprehensible act. And matter deciding, of JGP.
Can I lay out my concern with the government's argument? And that is, in reviewing the cases, it seems to me that there are two features for the CIMT assault type cases that have appeared. One of them is that culpable mental state, the specific intent, and I don't think anyone denies that the Oregon statute has that here. But the other one is actual injury, and that is that it, you know, in the Arizona law, it was, you know, touching wasn't enough. In Ladder Singh, it was that sustained fear of a terrorist threat that was important in that panel's decision as an important factor. In Coquico, the laser pointing case, there was no requirement of any actual injury either, nor is there one here. Why? It seems to me as if matter of JGP, the board decided to boil everything down to a specific intent. Why is that consistent with this precedent?
So in Ladder Singh, although actual harm was required, the court's decision did not hinge on the fact that actual harm was required in that statute. Rather, the court distinguished distinguished Fernandez-Ruiz based on three factors. The court distinguished Fernandez-Ruiz because the underlying conduct itself that was threatened would itself be a crime involving moral turpitude. And the same is true here. The intentional infliction of serious bodily injury would itself be a crime involving moral turpitude. Ladder Singh also distinguished Fernandez-Ruiz because the threat statute at issue in Ladder Singh criminalizes only conduct which results in substantial harm. It criminalizes only conduct that causes a threatened person to reasonably be in sustained fear. And that is similar to the Oregon menacing statute. The Oregon menacing statute prescribes conduct that would cause a reasonable person to experience fear of imminent serious physical injury.
But it doesn't. And so it doesn't actually require any person to actually fear any injury. So you have case like Dompling where there's nothing in the record that suggests that anyone feared the statement itself. And so I think isn't that an important distinction that in one law, one of the important features is that someone actually have to have been terrorized to feel that sustained fear. And that's not present in the Oregon law.
Right. But in Ladder Singh, the court stated that the court has upheld the board's emphasis on evil intent in the CIMT context. And there have been also as well other instances where this court has upheld crimes that were not necessarily aimed at causing actual harm. For example, this court has upheld aggravated DUI as a crime involving moral turpitude. DUI offenses committed with knowledge that a driver's license has been suspended or restricted, that does not require actual harm.
I agree with you in other contexts. We have, fraud-based crimes as well. No one has to suffer or injury in those contexts. But in this category of assault-based type CIMT crimes, that has been the consistent theme throughout these cases, at least to me, that not only do you have that culpable mental state, but also the actual infliction of injury in those cases that makes it an aggravating fact, that makes it a turpitudinous type offense.
Right. And so the board did state in matter of JGP the board stated that the intent is what is relevant in the menacing context, and that the emphasis on evil intent is proper because the intent has to be for a reasonable person to experience fear of imminent serious physical injury.
So why would it be depraved to intent to put someone in fear if you have no intent to harm that person?
And so having that person experience such fear that they are in fear essentially for their lives is what the board has said. It's the level of harm that the person must fear is what the board has said. Is what the board said in matter of JGP is what makes this a crime involving moral turpitude. It's the severity of the harm that the person intends to place the perpetrator intends to place the victim in fear of.
Right. I just wonder if the lack of intent to actually harm the victim takes it out of the moral turpitudinous realm.
No, because the board declined to hold that an entire category of crimes would not be crimes involving moral turpitude.
So can I pose the question to you that Judge Bomate's hypothetical, if you put a gun that's unloaded next to somebody's head, but they don't know it's unloaded and you pull the trigger, does that qualify under the statute?
And so there's actually a quite similar case in Oregon law that involved somewhat similar conduct. In State versus Lockwood, the defendant the court found that the evidence was sufficient to convict a defendant of menacing, where the defendant approached a victim's car brandishing a baseball bat and a pistol. And so that's somewhat similar to the hypothetical here. And so it seems like that would be the kind of conduct that could result in a menacing conviction.
My recollection is that this kind of conduct is actually a war crime under international law, that you can't do this to prisoners of war. Right? It's a war crime.
Right. And so the Board of Immigration Appeals, one of the statements that they made in matter of JGP is that the board said that such evidence or such conduct could be injurious because of the fear that it could cause.
We're required under the categorical approach to take the most basic, simplest version of what could be encompassed within it, right?
Yes.
Are you familiar with State versus Santa Cruz Bentecourt? It's another state appellate decision that seems to suggest that the laser pointing devices, because they're sight weapons, the act of shining that red beam could constitute menacing, which would seem to, you know, if that's the case, then that too is something that would go against our precedent in Coquico. Do you know about this case?
No, I was not. You said Santa Cruz
Bentecourt. I guess my point is, it seems that there are certain state appellate decisions that suggest that this menacing statute casts a wider net than some of the more egregious examples that could come up, such as someone approaching with a bat or a gun to a car or other very threatening activity such as that.
And so in matter of JGP, the board distinguished menacing because it involves the infliction of it involves the intent to inflict imminent serious physical injury, and so that what distinguishes it from Coquico is that intent to commit severe harm or the intent to place someone in fear of severe harm, and so that's what distinguishes this from assault crimes generally speaking, from simple assault crimes.
So do you agree with your colleague's framing of the issue that in simple assault cases, for it to be a CIMT, it would require an aggravating factor? Is that the right way to look at this cases?
I believe that that's not an aggravating factor is not always. This court has held that an aggravated factor is not always required for a CIMT finding.
In the assault cases?
In the assault cases, I'm just not sure that this case requires finding that, because it just seems like an aggravated factor is present here, and that the that's required that someone, and that it requires a specific intent to place someone in imminent fear of serious physical injury.
And that's the so you're saying that's the aggravating, the intent to put someone in serious physical harm.
Yeah, so we're, I mean, what we're saying is that it's not necessary. We don't believe that it's necessary to resolve that, but that would be the aggravating factor here.
So then this does boil down to just having a specific intent. That's the more culpable moral state, in your view, is sufficient to place a statute into a CIMT category.
Yes.
Thank you, counsel. I think we have no further questions for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fernandez?
Thank you, Your Honor. Matter
sorry,
of
Mr.
JGP.
Gonzalez, sorry.
That's okay. It was one of the cases.
Yeah, I know. It was on my head. Sorry.
yes, matter of JGP was decided unreasonably by the Board of Immigration Appeals and does not fit within the precedent of the Ninth Circuit. Briefly, Judge Baker, the hypothetical your hypothetical with a gun to the head and pulling the trigger with an unloaded gun differs from Lockwood cited by the government with brandishing a bat and a gun a pistol from distance is very different than the hypothetical, which again, I believe would fall under felony assault in Oregon.
Maybe a felony assault, but let me nevertheless, why can't, even if it's not a lesser included offense, we have different statutes that overlap all the time. Why can't this still be qualify as a violation of the Oregon menacing statute?
It said that Oregon menacing is not a lesser included offense.
But doesn't I know that, assault. but that doesn't matter. You can still have overlapping statutes.
Well, and then I think that goes back to Judge Sanchez's point that Oregon menacing could encompass a wider range of acts, including your hypothetical, which should be a crime involving moral turpitude, and the Dompling case, which should not be a crime of moral turpitude where no one felt any fear. So again, the precedent here under Coquico and Ruiz Fernandez says that simple assault is not a crime involving moral turpitude. And then this court in Latter Singh said that the California assault with the intent to injure was a crime involving moral turpitude. Oregon's menacing does not fit this rubric. Oregon's menacing should be held with Coquico and Ruiz Fernandez in the Arizona and California simple assault statutes, not crimes involving moral turpitude, and distinct from Latter Singh requiring that intent to injure, which is the aggravating factor that makes it rise to a crime involving moral turpitude.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gonzalez, and this case will be submitted.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Next case for argument is Davis versus Cranfield Aerospace Solutions Limited.